Support for Impact Cincinnati comes from Murray and Robin Sinclair.
Good morning. This is Impact Cincinnati on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Marianne Zalesnik. Cincinnati's fire department has been operating for more than a century. It's faced some challenges the past several years from budget cuts and brownouts. This morning, we'll talk about the fire department and how it operates. Joining me are Cincinnati Fire Department Chief Richard Braun and International Association of Firefighters Local 48 Union President Matt Alter. We'd like to hear your questions and comments. You can email them to impact@wvxu.org or post them on our Facebook page. And we should say that Matt Alter is joining us on the phone this morning. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Certainly glad to have everybody here. I think a really good place to start is to just talk a little bit about how the fire department is set up, how many companies you have, and how they're based around the city. And Chief, maybe you can start with that.
Sure. The department is strategically placed stations around the city to give the quickest responses we can to the citizens. We have 26 stations. We have 26 engine companies, which are paramedic engine companies. We have 12 ladder companies. We have 2 heavy rescue companies, and we have 12 medic vehicles. The city is broken up into what we call 5 or 4 districts, and each district has a district chief that presides over it, goes on the runs, and are basically our incident commanders. They handle the staffing and all the manpower needs of that district.
I think I understand what a medic operation is and those sorts of things. What's the difference between a ladder company and a high-rise company? What does that mean?
Well, our engine companies are the ones that everybody associates with having hose, connecting up to the hydrants. The firefighters assigned to the engine companies are the ones that go into the houses or buildings and apply the water or foam to the fire. The truck companies are the larger piece of equipment, which the ladders go up to in the high rises or on roofs of homes, into second, third floor windows. And their jobs are a lot different than what's on the engine company. The ladder company crews do ventilation. They place lights. They place fans. They do forcible entry. They handle the utilities. They do the rescues. So they have a varied array of jobs that they do, which supports the engine company advancing the hose lines.
Matt, anything you wanted to add to that?
No, I agree with what the chief is saying. And I think in the fire service, I think what a lot of people would see with Cincinnati, the way that we operate, is kind of what we call a traditional truck and a traditional engine. And they are unique services, and I think it's important to note that when you're a Cincinnati firefighter, you have to know all aspects of this job. Every firefighter is at the minimum emergency medical technician, but they're also firefighters, and they also have to know how to work things like the jaws of life and, work on roof ladders. Even in, when we have these wintry conditions, our firefighters go up on there. So definitely a wide array of skills. And the chief said, our fire engines, these firefighters, the same ones that may be going in with a hose line to put a fire out, can also be the ones that hook you up to a heart monitor to determine whether or not you might have a life threatening condition when you call 911. So it's a wide array of skills and a very, very deep breadth of knowledge that our firefighters have.
Well, let's talk about training. I know obviously you go through training to become a firefighter, but do you have follow up training as you're on the job over time?
Oh, yes. We have continual training. We're required because firefighters maintain at least 3 to 4 state certifications that they're required to have. And all of those require continuing education units. So generally, your certifications last 3 years, and then you have to renew them. You have to show that you've gone to certain classes to maintain your status. And so we're continually giving classes for that. We have what we call Center Learn, which is on the computer, is a computer-based programming classroom where they can go on at their own leisure, go through a class, take a test to certify that they understand the information that logs it in for them. And so if they're ever audited, that they have an audit trail of when they took the class and their score in the class. So it is very intensive to keep everyone up trained because, as Matt said, our firefighters are not, you have to be certified as a firefighter. You have to be certified as an EMT or a paramedic, which is another advance up. We have certified instructors. We have we're all certified inspectors, so to go out and do building inspections. And so all these various certifications we hold have to be maintained throughout your career.
Now, you talk about, we talked earlier about all the different engine companies and things that you have around town and how they're spaced out well so you can handle things. But you've been experiencing something called brownouts. First of all, define what a brownout is, and Matt, jump in if you'd like with that too, and then we'll talk about the effect that has on your ability to cover the city.
Sure. What brownouts are is when a municipality finds that they're having a shortage of funding. Instead of closing stations or shutting down a piece of equipment, they'll take a piece of equipment out of service for the day. For instance, today we have three brownouts. So there's three companies that normally would be in service that are out of service due to lack of manpower.
And that's in how many different firehouses?
That's three firehouses.
So, but they still have maybe one truck instead
of
two?
Yes, we keep every station open. And which what that does for the citizens is it maintains that first company would get there as soon as it usually always did. And it's especially special to us for because of our EMS side. And your closest medic is your closest fire station. And that's always nice to know. And we maintain that. What happens with brownouts is that where we have stations that have engine companies and ladder companies, I try to explain it similar to a ball team, that our people are trained at different skills when you're on the engine. The engine company, as I said before, they do different tasks than the truck company gets there. So they're trained on their skills. The truck company is trained on their skills. And you have to pull these all together on a fire scene. So when the engine company gets there, they're laying their hose and pulling hose off to go into the building. But then they rely on the truck company to open the building for them, to gain entrance, to ventilate it so it's tenable for them. And so if I'm in a station that has a truck and an engine and the engine's browned out, let's say, then I get to the fire first on the truck company. I open up, but I have to wait until the next engine company gets there. So there's that delay in time for the engine to get. Vice versa, if I'm the engine company, I get there and I lay my lines. I can't go in the building until the truck company shows up and opens the doors for me and gains entrance and ventilates. So this is where the delay gets in. The first companies are getting there, but it's when the second, third, fourth companies that are coming in to make our full complement to be able to work safely and efficiently for the citizens, that's where the brownouts really hit you. It hits the continuity of the firefighters because they do work as teams, and when there's brownouts, they're moved all over the city. So they know their areas, but if one of the companies is browned out, the area that company is in, now another company's covering for them that doesn't know the area as well as the one who's first in there. So that plays into it. So there's a lot of things that below the surface that the citizens don't see. I mean, the trucks are getting there, the trucks won, but they don't see the auxiliary things that happen to the firefighters that they have to make up when these brownouts occur.
Matt, anything you want to add to that?
Yeah, you know, it's kind of to extend on that a little bit. You know, when we talk about, you know, we are, you know, the firehouses with the brownout situation, yes, every firehouse does continue to be staffed with you know, a truck, whether it be an engine or a ladder company. But I think it is important to note that, you know, the factor that that always comes into play is the impact comes in is we are making runs. So yes, you know, that firehouse does still have an engine or ladder in it, but our run volume doesn't decrease. Just because we're browning out fire companies every day doesn't mean that the citizens are calling 911 any less. And like the fire chief said, you know, we've got a total of 40 companies in the city, you know, between when you add up the engine, the ladders, and the heavy rescues, there's 40 companies in the city. Every fire company that we have off or that's browned out for the day represents 2.5% of our street strength and our ability to handle any kind of incident. So today we have three brownouts. It's 7.5% of our, we started off today 7.5% deficiency, and we go from there. And every run that we make, every time a company is out on a run, you're taking a 2.5% hit on street strength. And, you know, there's a lot of variables that come into play. You know, even when you're at full strength, you never know where the next incident's going to go. I think if you could ever find a fire chief or any emergency manager that could sit there and pinpoint to you on a map where the next emergency is, I think they'd probably be the highest paid government employee in the entire world. I mean, I think we'd love to be able to pick where the next unfortunate accident's going to happen, but we can't. So, you know, we do have to remain cognizant of that you know, we're the firefighters are out there, they're still making runs, and you know that when we start off low, that has an impact on it. And you know, there is sometimes delay, and sometimes it's very difficult to determine how long it may be, because a run may come in that area, and where normally the ladder truck may have been available or the engine may have been available to make that second run in that running area, they're browned out for the day. A backup company from another jurisdiction, like the chief said, or another firehouse has to come in and make that run for them.
Now tell me again, why do the brownouts occur? What causes this? Just lack of staff that day?
It's the staffing. If the city doesn't have the funding to keep the department at full strength, then through attrition we have dropped down. And when you drop down, the only thing that's left is to, if you don't have the people to staff it, then you just have to cut staffing.
So, but why is it different every day?
Well, we move it around. It changes. It's kind of like, okay, let's let everybody be a part of it. And also we take a look, and the chiefs know what's going on in the city during that day, and that determines the brownouts. If something big is happening in Westwood, okay, let's keep all those companies, as many as we can, in service. And that's how we move it around.
But there are three brownouts every day then?
There's a lot of times there's five.
How does that, because of vacation days? Or, I mean, how does that happen?
I think so. I mean, we're the first responders when people call 911. And, you know, we get called from everything, you know, from what some people would consider something relatively minor to some serious things. So, you know, firefighters get sick. I think there's vacation and holiday time in there.
So that's why the staffing is less than on some days than others. Are you ever at full strength?
No, not at this time, no.
But there are some plans in the works here, right? You have a fire recruit class?
We have a recruit class. We'll be graduating on March 29th, and we're preparing to start another class on May 6th. And these are being funded through FEMA grants. So for 2 years, the federal government will pay the salaries and benefits for these firefighters. So
how many in a recruit class?
40.
And so how will that bring you up to full strength?
No, we would need another. Once we get the second class,
say that again, Matt.
Like the chief was saying, we've got a class that's going to graduate at the end of March, and I think the hope is that the fire chief, and I think Chief Brown, correct me if I'm wrong, is to start another one this spring following it. But even with that, you know, we're expected, and that's 80 recruits, you know, within a year. But we're expected between the beginning of this year and the end of 2014 to lose almost 60 firefighters through retirements. And, you know, we're already starting off, you know, almost 100 firefighters short. Granted, we're adding 80, but then we're also expected to lose another 60, and plus some of the changes we've made within the department. We're playing catch-up, and it's going to take, I think, continual classes back-to-back to get us to where we need to be.
Now, there was a time when there were not recruit classes. Was that part of the problem? You weren't able to, or have you always had them? You just haven't had enough to fill the
schedule?
From 2009 till when we just started this class in October, there was no recruit classes at all. And, we were up to full staffing for a very short period of time in 2009. And then we had a big wave of retirements hit, and a lot of those retirements hit because it's kind of stepping back into history a little bit. Between 1975 and 1980, the city had no recruit classes, and there was a five-year lull. And then in the early 80s, they hired quite a few people. Between 1980 and 1984, there were a large number of classes. Well, those firefighters came up for retirement within the past couple years, so we're seeing a pretty big turnover in the number of firefighters.
Now, with the brownout, as it works when you're doing that, you need how many people to be on in one company to keep the truck moving?
Four.
What would happen? Why do you need four? What would happen if there were three? Could you operate it with three and at least get that truck to the scene? Or
what we do is we operate under the National Fire Protection Association 1710, which is the rules we follow that are national, and they call for four people. That's what their recommendation is. It's four. And everyone on the piece of equipment has specific jobs to do. So if you would take it down, then you're cutting a job back. And it goes into safety, where we have our two in, two out. There's always two people backing you up going in. Well, if you only have three, you don't have two. And so going down to three with brownouts would be tremendously risky, because the more people you cut back on a fire scene, the more unsafe it becomes for not only the firefighters but the citizens.
Matt, did you want to add to that?
We 100% agree. You know, Local 48 is 100% in agreement with the four-person staffing. And, you know, as we advance in technology, there's a number of actual scientific studies that are out there now. I think the National Institute of Standards and Technologies has them, where they can actually calculate efficiencies based on the number of firefighters we have on a fire truck. And, you know, they even say that the most efficient fire company has at least four firefighters on it. Because, like the chief said, everybody has a certain job that, you know, the driver, you know, operates, you know, gets the firefighters there safely during fire situations. He's operating this, you know, this piece of equipment that, you know, can pump, you know, thousands of gallons of water at hundreds of pounds per square inch of pressure. Each firefighter has a specific job. You know, I'm sure it'd be a lot of, you know, everybody out there has seen the hoses on the back of these trucks that are heavy. As well as, like the chief said, each one of us are either an EMT or paramedic, and we all have specific functions and roles on an EMS run. And there's an officer on the truck to make sure that, you know, he oversees the scene as a whole to make sure that the scene is safe for the firefighters. The firefighters are, operating safely, and, you know, he kind of provide direction into which way, you know, the incident should go, or where they need to go for a run.
We are talking this morning about the Cincinnati Fire Department. If you have a question or a comment, you can email it to impact@wvxu.org or post it on our Facebook page. We'll continue our discussion in just a moment.
Support comes from Bartlett, helping you achieve your financial goals by aligning investment strategies to your unique situation. Bartlett provides investment management and financial planning to high net worth individuals and families with solutions for every stage of life. A Bartlett advisor can be reached at 621-4612 or at bartlett1898.com. Support comes from the Miami University MBA program, home to the top-ranked part-time MBA program in the region. With an accelerated format, small engaging classes, and a convenient location in Westchester, you can learn more at their March 5th info session. More online at mba.miamioh.edu. Support comes from the Cincinnati Academy of Collaborative Professionals. Collaborative divorce, an opportunity that allows you the freedom to speak openly and create a settlement without the pain of litigation. What story do you want your children to tell about your divorce? Information online at collaborativelaw.com.
This is Impact Cincinnati and 91.7 WVXU. We're talking about the Cincinnati Fire Department today. My guest, Chief Richard Braun, and International Association of Firefighters Local 48 Union President Matt Alter, who's joining us on the phone. Again, if you have a question, send it to impact@wvxu.org or post it on our Facebook page. I want to get to a couple of the questions that have been sent in, and this comes from Keith, who says, in this age of manpower reduction in which government agencies are compared to ordinary for-profit organizations that make widgets, how does an emergency service get across the message that to fulfill its extraordinary mission, it must be staffed and equipped for the worst day of the year and not the normal day of the year? And I assume that that's always a challenge.
Yes, it's the one thing we look at is when we do our pre-planning and everything is looking at it from a worst-case scenario, which we have to all the time. A lot of people like to look at it from your best day. Well, we don't have the luxury of doing that. And so what we have to do is basically now able to tell our story and about our jobs and what it takes. And because it's a very labor-intensive profession, even with a medic run, if someone has a heart attack and for our medics could work on it, there can be up to seven firefighters in there, paramedics, working on this person and dealing with the family and, all the auxiliary things that needs to be done. And it's getting the statistics and being able to show that these firefighters are needed not only for the everyday work that they do, which is 75,000 runs a year, but also the runs like the casino collapse, where we tied up 8 of our 12 medic units, and they did a terrific job. The beginning of 2012 was extraordinary for Cincinnati. We had several fires where it was 12 to 20 people were passed through windows. And again, that is very labor intensive, and they have to be highly trained and efficient. Our paramedics, as Matt was saying earlier, our people do dual jobs, which a lot of people don't realize. They're a great bargain where we have our paramedics are also firefighters. So they're doing two jobs. So actually, to get a paramedic costs the city about $1.90 an hour. and you won't go anywhere else outside the world and find someone that's going to work for $1.90 an hour to do a job like a paramedic, because he's already getting his benefits and his pay for being the firefighter. When you see the rescues go, they have their special training. The our boats, bomb squads, those are manned by engine companies, where when they're not using those, they're regular engine companies in use. All the dual uses that we have. So we always look everywhere to try to get the biggest bang for the buck for the citizens. And so our firefighters are, it's becoming a more technical age and era for things they have with computers on the trucks, thermal imaging cameras, and to keep them trained and the training updated and to stay in the type of readiness that we need, it's very time consuming. Our firefighters work a 48-hour week. They get paid for 40 hours, so it's basically 8 hours every week. They work for free. A lot of people don't realize that.
Well, I do want to ask about that. I'm going to let Matt, if you want to jump in here at all, about the whole idea of staffing not for a normal day but for an extraordinary day.
Well, yeah, you know, that's the thing. You know, we talk about staffing for an extraordinary day, and it's staffing because, like I said before, you never know where the next run's going to come in. And it's also staffing to provide a service quickly, very quickly. Time is our job. Time, you know, the clock starts ticking before somebody even calls 911. And whether it be a fire or a medical emergency, that clock starts ticking. And the faster you can get there and we can, you know, provide the service, whether it be, you know, the paramedics, you know, providing some medication or hooking up to the heart monitor or CPR or the, you know, on a fire run, getting there and, you know, getting the ladders up and getting, you know, somebody rescued or getting this hose line stretched and putting the fire up, there's an impact there. And, you know, from a medical side, when you go to the hospital, there isn't one person there to work on you. You know, if you're having a heart attack, there's a whole team of physicians and nurses and assistants and things there providing assistance to you. And the same thing's true when you call 911 and you're having one of these emergencies. We provide, you know, it's a team approach. The firefighters show up on an engine company and the paramedics show up on the medic unit. And there's a team approach with every person having a specific function. And we also are doing this outside of a controlled environment. You know, we don't get there's not a controlled environment, whether you're in a dark alley or a fifth floor with no elevator.
But it's not always a medical situation, though. What if there truly were a really serious fire or even a situation like the shooting incident in Sandy Hook where you needed so many people on the scene? Do you have to be staffed for those kinds of tragedies every day just in case?
Absolutely.
And how often do you have those that really call out many, many stations?
Well, as we talked about earlier, at the beginning of 2012, it seemed like every week we were having one of those where, again, speaking of the casino collapse, these apartment complexes that caught fire. I mean, those could have been tragedies. We could have had 20 victims. We could have had 10 victims. So it's not unusual that 8, 10, 12 times a year you're having incidents that are calling for the more equipment that you need that are, you know, we're very good at keeping them down. Like I said, we're very good at, we've rescued 20 people, 12 people. If we hadn't have been there, those would have been people that have been lost.
Right. So, and I think it almost happens. And sometimes that's even, you know, I think, Marianne, what you're asking is almost on a daily basis, I shouldn't say almost, multiple times daily, we are called where we do have to pull a large number of our resources for runs. We get called out for multiple fires a day in the city of Cincinnati, and just a normal house fire, you know, where you're getting, you know, three fire engines, you're getting three ladder trucks, two district chiefs, two medic units, the heavy rescue squad. So you're pulling a large number of resources for a house fire, and the reason you're pulling these resources is, like I said, is because of time. You put these resources on the scene. You get them there as fast as you can, and the idea is to get to get somebody that may be hurt or trapped or injured or whatever it may be for that particular incident, get them out as fast as we can, get the fire put out, which reduces loss to the structure, which overall saves the entire community money. You know, the faster we can reduce property damage, the better the entire community is.
Now, you mentioned the shifts and how many hours a week you work. Basically, it's two 24-hour days. Is that how it works?
They work 24 hours on, 48 hours off.
So within a 7-day period, that's
two or three days.
We work in a 7-day period. We work 4 days because we work a 16-hour shift on one day, and then it continues on to, until the next day for another 7 hours. So we, in a 7-day period, we work actually on 4 days.
Because you're not starting going midnight to midnight.
Correct. Right.
What time of the day does the shift start?
7.
In the morning.
In the morning.
So you work 7 one morning till 7 the next morning.
Correct.
And you're off for 48 hours.
Correct.
And come back at 7 o'clock again. So if you come in on Monday at 7, you work till Tuesday at 7, go home for the rest of that day. They're off Wednesday and Thursday, and you're back to work on Friday?
They're back on Thursday.
They
only get Wednesday off. They're back.
Oh, so Tuesday counts as a day off.
Yes.
Also, because they're getting done at 7,
correct.
I see.
Well, right. They count the first day as a day off. But there again, there's not many of our companies that can say that they don't get, you know, we don't get calls for service in the night. A lot of our companies, just with changes in our community, they're working through the night. So
are they often up 24 hours, or do you get time to sleep? I mean, how often?
There's a number of our companies that are up a majority of the shift, if not the entire shift.
This is from Charles, Stuart, who wants to know what the effect is on public safety of the brownouts, which we've talked about, but also the effects of firefighter health and safety. He says, for the last 5 years, I've been involved in research on firefighter health and safety and aware of multiple hazards to health that firefighters face. And he wants to know if how you're dealing with that and funding to address those hazards.
Address that in several ways. Something that's going to be starting here in the next couple of weeks is we are starting what we call our safety captains, and there'll be a captain on each unit that will be going around to each firehouse and making sure everything is safe in the houses, going on all the fire runs and making sure the fire scenes are safe, monitoring the air after the fire's put out to make sure that the atmosphere is not toxic for the firefighters. For years, we would just take our mask off and then breathe in the toxic fumes for, you know, a half hour, an hour. Now we don't let them go back in, or don't let them take their mask off until it gets into a safe atmosphere. We have gotten meters that will tell us that. So we continually, that's our top priority, is to for the safety of the citizens and then the safety of the firefighters.
This is another quick question. We're almost out of time, from Peggy, who says, residents in Hartwell have been told by fire department personnel the local firehouse was on brownout status 50% of the time last year. This creates a unique and potentially dangerous situation, as Hartwell is the northernmost Cincinnati neighborhood and is not surrounded by neighboring city firehouses. Your comments?
Yeah, that station up there is, I would have to see it. I would doubt that it was 50% of the time. Generally, it's about a third of the time, the way the list goes. And there are stations around there, and generally it takes anywhere from 3 to 4 minutes for those stations, depending on where the run would be. A lot of people base it right from the firehouse, but not all fires are across the street from the firehouse. So depending on what direction they're going, they're getting closer to the next firehouse that's down the road. So we do everything we can to maintain. There are no good situations with brownouts. There's always a plot.
We're out of time. It went very, very quickly. Thank you both for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you for listening to Impact Cincinnati on 91.7 WVXU. My guests today were Cincinnati Fire Department Chief Richard Braun and International Association of Firefighters Local 48 Union President Matt Alter. Archives of our programs are available on our website, wvxu.org. Producer for today's program was Pete Reitmeier.